All right, on today's episode, we have a dear friend of mine, Kelsey, and if you thought I was aggressive and direct, well, this woman has every right to be with a story to boot, and she takes us to church, and it lands and it tickles, and we talk about how taking ownership and accountability for your life instead of adopting a victim mentality, practicing radical honesty and self-awareness to identify and change negative behaviors and habits. Plant medicine and therapy can be powerful tools for healing and overcoming trauma, and supporting veterans and making a difference requires supporting organizations that are doing the hard work. And I was blessed. We cried a lot. Kelsey is an incredible friend of mine. We met co-facilitating an event, and she quickly became one of my favorite humans ever. She is the queen of a giant podcast, has a book, and has a story that inspires me and humbles me for her strength, resiliency, and ability to overcome all of it. And this episode is just loaded with nuggets and permission slips for all of us, myself included, because I had pages of notes, to step into that power, to take control of our life, and to really create the results that we want. And so without further ado, I could never do this episode enough justice with an intro. And so we'll just get out of the way and let's get into the show. All right, everybody. Today, George might be the soft one. And I mean that with the most love, because our incredible guest today has tickled my heart and also performed some surgery on it so eloquently and aggressively that just led me to love myself and her even more. And a lot of you give me credit for being a savage. I don't think so, but I feel like if we're looking at evidence, I lose that game compared to this powerful mage of a woman that I get to call a really, really dear friend who I like instantly fell in love with. And if you want a straight to the source, straight to the point, straight results with all the experience, the leverage, the know-how, and the knowledge to do it, today's guest is the best person to do it. And so without further ado, I would love to welcome you, Kelsey, to the show. Welcome to the show, girl.
Thanks, George. It's funny how we met. I have been talking about you for the past 3 solid weeks, almost in every single conversation. And just before we started this, I just had a George moment with a client, like a full on in your face Montana George moment. And I'm not going to lie, I'm so grateful to be here. And I'm so grateful that you walked into my life the way you did. And so you may say I'm the savage, but it takes one to know one. So thanks for having me, man.
I feel like we walked in together and it was like, boom, boom. And we're like, wait, love. Like there was a few explosions, and I'm sure guys will talk about on the show, because Kelsey was in Montana with me. If you saw all of us silly people doing ice baths and exposure retreats and all those things, then that's where we met. And so with that though, I love you so much, but what I love even more is kind of your like radical, here it is, here's the meat, let's get back to work kind of approach. And it's something that I just admire, and you have all of it to back it up. And I asked you right before the show, I'm like, what's the thing that tickles the most right now? And your response was like, oh yeah. And so you're somebody who literally, we'll get into your story, I'm sure, but I'd say you have some experience with resiliency and overcoming things. You also talk to millions and millions of people and everywhere. And like, what's the number one thing that you see people or you have coming up right now?
The victim mentality is flowing out of people's mouths, their energy source, whatever you want to call it. It is flowing out of people at a pace that I cannot control or handle, to be frank with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And can you paint that for everybody real quick, though, for context?
Yeah, so what I'm talking about when I speak to the victim mentality is the, for example, I just had someone say to me, well, why didn't they tell me this before I was going to go? Well, because they didn't need to. Don't turn around and blame other people for your problems because you didn't do X, Y, and Z. That's not on them. That's on you. You need to own that. But people are so hard up on the idea that it's about me, 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 me. They forget anybody else in the room. And then they want to blame everybody else in the room when it doesn't go their way. And we're teaching this to children, we're teaching it in schools, and we're teaching it in business environments. And that's why you see when you're next to an individual that is a winner, you have an average of 15% bump in your business. When you're next to a B player, you lose about 30%. And part of the problem is because people accept that they don't have to try and that nothing is their own It's their own. Nothing is there. It's everyone else's fault and never, ever theirs. And I'm really on one this week with it.
I love it. I just love that right now it's only tickling the old version of me because I'm like, hey, I'm glad we didn't record the show 4 years ago or I'd be in tears on the other side right now. I'm like, get out of my head, my body, right? And and here's the thing though. I love you're on it though, right? Like I love around it because like even for everybody listening, like, oh, George, thanks for your service. I'm so glad you were in Afghanistan. I'm like, yeah, you know who was standing there next to me? Her. Maybe a different place, maybe a different time, right? And somebody who also helps people with this every day. But I feel like one of the things that's missing the most right now is people being like intellectually integrous or honest with the situations at hand, right? Like now I have a question about this for you because I love that you're on a rant about this and I'll take all of your rants, right? Is this something that you're seeing a whole lot more of now or has this been like a slippery slope or any idea where it's coming from? Because I also want to know how people can unpack it and
really get
back into the weeds.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a slippery slope and it happens very slow drip style. And I think it's because of the environments we put ourselves in. So it's that old saying, right? You can take a fish out of a dirty fish tank, but you put it back in, it's going to run into the same patterns and behaviors if you're not consciously aware, right? And you said something on the retreat that I really loved, and it was like awareness is the finish line. And so if we can just get people to be aware that they're doing it, then we can really see what they're made of. Because if we can show them that they're aware and then yet they're still not taking action or taking accountability. And I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about extreme ownership. I'm talking about radical accountability for your life in every single way, in every shape of it. And if you're not willing to, once you have the evidence in front of you, then it shows me more of who you are.
And like you, like, and your podcast, right? What your podcast is Brass and Unity, right? Yeah, like you talk a lot about this and you have so many conversations with people about this, right? And so for people that are in that, and by the way you said that is hilarious. I have one thing to add, by the way, because the old personal development guy in me, I got murdered for this in a room full of my peers because I was at a personal development conference learning personal development. And we'd been taught distinctions. And then I stood up and I was like, I was like, well, I'm going to take responsibility for that. And this woman, Lisa Kalman, all 4'11" of her, probably 100 pounds on a good day, she's like, take responsibility. You've been responsible the whole fucking time. You never not had it. And I was like, and like blasted me. And like this grown tough Marine just broke. And I was like, what? And it took me years to understand that. And I love it. But now in hearing that, I would love to hear how somebody goes about unpacking that because there's all these books that exist, right? Oh, you can go read this one. You can go read that one. You can go read that one. And it just turns into more mental masturbation material, right? So like what's a tangible how or like where does somebody even begin?
Take inventory of what you do in your daily habits. The first thing you can do is start looking at your behaviors and what you're doing and being honest with yourself. So if you're the type of human who gets up and the first thing you do is you grab your phone and then you grab a coffee and then you go right to your desk and you don't eat until 6 p.m. at night. Well, let's take a look at why you're feeling the way you're feeling and why you're eating the way you're eating and just be really ruthlessly honest. So it doesn't – a wise man once told me – that when you get the answer, hang up the fucking phone. So it's not that hard. It really isn't. And so it's really simple. Sit down. What do you do in the morning? What do you do next? And walk through each step. And if you're looking at those steps and going, that's not helping me to get to where I want to be, then you immediately need to tackle that one first.
Yeah, because this one tickles a ton and probably the conversation I have the most. It's like, I did a podcast on this a couple weeks ago, and it was like the number one way people self-sabotage, but it was either they remain, they react, or I forgot the third one, but it was the remain one that nailed me so much, like that sunk cost bias, right? Where it's almost like you said it with the fish in the fish tank analogy. It's like if you take yourself out of your environment, but then you change nothing in your environment or you don't take any inventory for what adjustments can be made and you drop yourself right back in, all that clarity that you picked up is going to get behaviorally taken out of you, not intentionally, right? Not intentionally. Like one of my mentors says this best. He said, nobody chooses to self-sabotage. We simply behave our way into it.
Right.
And that fish, I actually have never heard that one until today. So like kudos for that one. Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. So consider your name full credit dropped every time I hear it so I can have more Kelsey moments right back. Because, oh, trust me, girl, I've had quite a few Kelsey moments since Montana as well. And I was like, well, Kelsey said, you should have seen Kelsey's face, but I learned how to adjust that one differently. And then I was like, boom, 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 boom. And so it's equilateral. It's equilateral both ways. And so with that, and this is something that we even talked about, like in Montana. So like you came to Montana, you had your own breakthroughs, you were there, support, mm-hmm. boom, boom, boom. But like, I think this is a really good question to ask is like, I watched you get clarity. When you left, how did you go about integrating those pieces in this new fish tank or new fish water? Because I would love to like kind of hear your process. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was intense. That weekend was not expected. It was incredibly welcomed, but not at all expected. It was very different. And it was funny too, because I talked to Bon and I remember she said to me, she goes, you know, if George didn't say something, I was going to. And I think the reason when she said it, I kind of got back and I thought about it was... It's really hard for people who have never had a brain injury to understand what regulation is like for a brain injury. And so when George said the things he said to me, I could hear them. But if she would have said those same things to me, there's no way I would have heard them. Because I think a lot of times we look for advice towards people we want to be, we want to emulate. And I want to emulate people who understand me, but not everyone's going to understand what it's like to blow things up for a living and to understand what it does to me physiologically, and that my nervous system, for some people who work in certain areas, is going to always be a lot more heightened than even if I sat and meditated and did breath every minute of every day. My nervous system is always going to be radically different than other people's because of the brain injury. So that being said, I took everything with a serious amount of weight, and I took everything, every bit of that weekend I took home with me. And I called my husband on my way back to at the airport. And I said, look, X, Y, and Z happened. And this is what I need to change. And this is how I need to change it. I'm asking for your support on this. And he goes, absolutely, 100%. I'm surprised you didn't punch him in the face, though. I'm not going to lie. And I said, yeah, me too, man. So, you know, and I'll get to what I'm alluding to in a second. But so what I did is I came home and I was really hyper aware of behaviors, habits, and traits. And so I immediately made sure that I didn't miss a breathwork session. I immediately made sure I didn't miss a grounding. I immediately made sure that when it came down to sitting with medicine the way I know I should have been, I recalibrated that immediately. So that was a big one for me. And then I just got really honest about my behaviors. Like my behaviors were maybe 1 degree off what they should have been, but that 1 degree after a long period of time can steer you in the wrong direction. And the one thing that I loved that you said to me, and we are having this conversation, you know, like we were in this space, which most people think is really, really open-minded, but it's not always. And I remember I said something and you're like, why are you even complaining about it? What's the point of complaining about it? Just fucking change it. And I was like, yeah, exactly. Just change it. You're right. You're right. I actually have the power to do that. What am I saying? I was thinking small. I was playing small, even though my thoughts were big. The in-between actions, even though I was taking them in a really small way where I know I could have been eating the elephant differently. So for me, it was just making sure that the people around me were aware of the intention I was setting before I even got back, that this is what I was needing from a support network's perspective. And then letting them know that I needed a little time. So like, I didn't talk to anyone for 2 weeks. Like I had my neighbor come over and be like, you haven't called me. You haven't done this. And I said, this is not about me. And I immediately went into George state. She's like, but you didn't call. And I said, no, 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 no. This is not about me. You don't get to put that on me. I said, I'm doing me right now. And I need you to be good with that. Just the way you need me to be good with you when you need me. I need me right now. I didn't have it for you. So I'm not going to show up and pretend I did because it's not authentic. It's not aligned. And so I just didn't. And that was a shock to a lot of people because this was arguably a harder integration for me than any medicine I had ever done. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I 100% understand. And I also thought a few times that weekend you were going to punch me in the face.
It was weird because normally I would have. Let me give you an example, team, of what George did. George got down to my 5-foot face which is also 110 pounds, and screamed at the top of his lungs in my face. Let me just preface this with, no one talks to me that way, ever, ever, anyone ever, because they know I'll hit them in the face. But there was something that was speaking to me the first time we had our interaction, and I hated so much how it went. That little bit of me that didn't want to be like that saw an opportunity with someone I felt like I could truly, even though I didn't know you, that I could truly sit down with and be like, help me understand what just happened. Because I've been waiting for that moment to be able to talk to somebody that could also understand what just happened, but I've never been presented with that moment because our community is what our community is. And I've just never been given the opportunity. And so that's truly what it was a massive opportunity. And for the first time, I was able to see the opportunity without rage attached. So as soon as you were open to that, it was like I was all in. I was 100% all in, because you weren't sitting there telling me, you weren't my yes man. Everyone's the yes man. I needed someone to be like, no, this is what I've been looking for, though, for years. Was like someone to stand and scream in my face and be like, shut the fuck up. They want to be around you, bitch. Stop it.
That's what I said.
That's what you said.
Just so everybody knows, like, where I screamed, I was like, I'm screaming how perfect you are. And but here's the thing that you got to know. Like, when I walked in that house, right, like, I live up the street a couple hours, and Matt and Bon are dear friends, and we were co-facilitating and supporting them. But I remember when I walked in that house and you and I met, and I was like, I know that woman. I know that woman. We might be brother and sister that both have PTSD and TBI and blank. And I was like, I literally was like, it's me. Like, it's me. Yeah. And we were able to connect. But then, like, we also had, even in the conversation, like, we just kept talking to each other or bumping around each other and then picking up these little pieces. But there was always this, like, this thing that clicked where I'm like, oh, I get you. I get you, right? And and one of the things that I love about you is how so radically honest you are. But also, like, when you speak, it's because you see something. And I'm like, I go to bed at night thinking, like, what if that thing I would have said would have been the difference?
Right. 1,000%. Right?
What if in that moment it was like, boom, and this took time, but I don't want anybody thinking about here yelling at people. I do that too. But typically I do that in public audiences to offend them, to get more people to listen to the keynote. And then in private audiences, I'm more Teddy Bear-y.
But I needed. I needed someone to get down to my level and look me in the eyes. And you were doing it from a place of love. That's the difference between you can yell and raise your voice at someone out of a place of love, like I just did to someone. Or you can yell out of a place of anger and frustration and a place where you're projecting what's going on inside of you. And I think, and I may be wrong on this, but I think when we met, I tickled the living shit out of you in a way you hadn't been tickled in a long time.
It's been a long time, but I'll tell you quite blatantly what happened. I remember it so vividly. And I was like, God, I really, really like this woman and I enjoy talking to her, except I don't get to talk.
Mm.
And I was like, whoa. And like instantly in my body, I felt like there was a disservice to the world happening because I just wanted to listen to you. Mm. And I was like, I want to hear what you got to say. I want to hear what you got to say. But it felt like I was getting bounced around in a pinball machine. And I was like, what's going on? And then finally, I don't even think I knew. I think my words were just like, yo, where are we right now? Like, where are we? And then it was after that moment that both you and I started like presencing in to each other more, right? And then when you see somebody you love, right? Like, I was so interested and I loved hearing you share. And like, even particularly like when you speak, like speaking into other people when you reference them. And I noticed the quality of how you spoke about other people. Mm. And then you start to recognize where people end up in a paradox. I'm like, no, this woman is walking hard. Like, she knows everybody. I watched you walk around that house and talk to everybody, touch everybody, engage with everybody. And I was like, I can tell by how she operates. She just wants everybody to feel like seen and get it and like stand in their power. And I felt it. And then I was like, I don't even know if she knows that it's received this way sometimes. or that it can be taken that way. And so I was like, mm-hmm. and then what it was for me, Kelsey, is it was me, right? It's me. It's my number one shadow in wanting to always have space for people mm-hmm. and forgetting what it feels like to be on the other side when I was like, God, I'm interested. And then I was like, oh, and then I was like, but you probably said the same thing to me 8 ways from Sunday, just in different language throughout the week. You tend to use no words and they land so much more because your looks.
It's my face.
Oh, girl.
I know.
We could make like a dictionary of Kelsey's faces, and I am so here for it. And if we could automate some GIFs for the iPhone and Instagram, I'll start using them on stories. But you're also with that too. It's like, I think for me personally, in navigating life like we've navigated, I got so used to being broken and sick and tired and having to explain myself. And it was like I constantly had to like justify. And it accidentally conditioned this muscle in me that like every time I spoke, I had to basically like, do you get it? And it was kind of like this byproduct. And I was like, no, like that's not how the game is won. But I also equally, you did tickle me in all the right reasons, because you literally integrate so quick. You take everything head on. Like you are literally the first one in line to head into the storm. And I'm like, I want to run at life with you. And so for me, I'm like, well, if we're going to be teammates, we got to do this like we used to do in the Marine Corps. Let's just get everything out on the field right now, so we're on solid ground. And, you know, I feel like it even ties into our conversation, because the difference between love and agenda is you being 100% accurate with your own moral inventory, your values. You said them earlier, your behaviors, your habits, your traits, because then in that place, like everything's a good come from if you're coming from a place of authentic connection or asking feedback. But also, and an important point, if at any point Kelsey was like, well, you're fucking wrong, and I'm like, oh, please tell me how I'm wrong. I would actually love to learn. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and that's the difference. Like it might've landed that way, but even in the same lens with Chelsea, who mm-hmm. nicknamed me the hammer.
Yeah, she loves you.
Who
so
just
deeply.
Told that story at our event the other day, and I loved her to absolute pieces. We love you, Chelsea. We love you to pieces. Oh, and thank you for Chelsea for calling you while I was running the event, because you called me and I felt bad. I couldn't get to my phone and I was like, Kelsey just called. She's like, what? I'm like, oh, actually, Chelsea, can you text Kelsey and make sure we're good so she knows I see her? And boom, 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 right? And but even in that one, we had conversations and she's like, well, actually, you're not right. I'm like, oh my God, can you teach me? Mm-hmm. Right. And it's always this. And I feel like the benefit of those containers too, and you even spoke to this earlier, it's like you are who you surround yourself with, right? Like if you spend time around savages, mm-hmm. you'll get a net increase in your business, your life, your productivity. And if you spend time around bottom feeders or victim mentality, it's going to have an influence on you. And I give credit to people, and all of us are putting ourselves in those containers, because we also have something shared in common. We're like, we're all here to grow. Like mm-hmm. we're all here to learn. We're all here to connect. And I feel like that solid ground is one of the reasons that the victim mentality happens, is because people aren't willing to be really open and honest about how they feel. And so everybody operates on this like hollow ground.
That too. And then the people that you surround yourselves aren't willing to have the hard conversation with you. And I believe that if you're a good friend, you owe it to that human being to be like, hey. And that's why I think I took it too from you differently, because it's like, I could see that you weren't just being an asshole. You weren't trying to be mean. You were trying to, and there was a moment where you pushed really far and I was like, are you mad at me? Are you angry with me? And you're like, no, I'm not at all. And so once you know where like a person's line is, I think ultimately what happens is we've cultivated a society of human beings that believes that it's only about them, and those around them won't check those people. And I want people that will check me. I want people that want to see me elevate and that want to correct me and hold me accountable to what I just said. I don't want anyone. And I've cut, oh, God, recently, everyone, the amount of people, I will remove you if you are a yes man. I don't want, nor do I need that. I need, hey, maybe the way you said that was a little out of line. Or, hey, maybe the way that you spoke to that person about this topic was maybe a little more insensitive. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you why I came at it that way and that way. And if it still seems that way, then great. Tell me how to fix that. Because nobody wants to be anything but the best version of themselves. But the problem is we've become insanely complacent. And then everyone around the complacency feeds back into it because they want that person to like them. They don't want them to help them. They want to be liked, not to be loved. And so that's, you know, there's that saying, there's 8 billion people in the world. It's not my job to be liked by all of them. Furthermore, I'd rather be loved or hated. I can't be everyone's favorite when there's 8 billion people. I'm not a chameleon. I'm exactly who I am. And if that rubs you the wrong way, I'm your mirror, right? That's it. It's not my problem. It's not about me. It's not my business. But I'm here to help you with it.
Oh my God, I love this so much. Oh, I could do like a 20-hour podcast with you and just drop quarters in you and be like, Kelsey, no. Kelsey, Kelsey.
And just say when.
Well, we're doing it right now because this will be one of many and I'm sure it's going to continue. And I'm like, and Kels, because yeah. I love it. And I do have a question. This might make sense because I know for me, right, and everybody on my show kind of knows my story. They know my Afghanistan. They know all of that stuff. But you said something at the beginning of the show that's going to make me emotional right now. Mm. I don't think I've ever articulated what it felt like to be feeling helpless, like none of this work works, like the modalities, the therapy work, the things I was doing, right? But wanting to be in with everybody so bad and then feeling like nobody got it. And I'm like, no. Like I had 7 traumatic brain injuries in 2 years, right? Like, you know, there's people in the same bucket of me that still haven't regained function and memory, right? And like, I forget about that. But when you said it, it tickled bad because there's like these invisible hurdles that nobody else can see. And it actually got to a point where the only reason I actually got better was because after 4 years of smashing my head against a wall, like metaphysically, like mentally with like every modality, every therapy, everything you can imagine, it was when I found out about some TBI research and some stem cells and physical injuries. And once I did the stem cells, everything started to click because there was so much physical damage. None of the emotional stuff was sticking. And it took me getting a business card partner that happened to be a brain specialist, then partner with a stem cell doctor. And then they like took me to church. And then like, I started to feel it. And so I think it's really easy. And when meeting you and seeing you to be like, oh, this woman, like boom, boom. But like you walk from some crazy experience. And I would love it if you could share with people kind of like how you even got here.
Yeah. I'll give a quick overview and then the rest of you can read the book because it'll take you hours. It's a problem. You don't need to hear it.
Yeah, just the synopsis tonight. And then we'll include the link to the book in the show notes because I recommend it.
Thank you. Yeah, so I served, like George was saying, I served in the Canadian Army. I was an M777 155 millimeter howitzer gunner in Mortarman. But then I worked with the 101st out of FOB and FOB Ramrod in Afghanistan. And then I was borrowed by the British Black Watch and 3rd Scott Battalion to go run and gun with those boys and be before CSTs were CSTs, we were just called female searchers. We'd take the women and kids, put them in a room, and we'd search them. And so I was on an operation in 2009 in the Panjwa district with the Brits when everything went as wrong as it could. And I was not prepared, trained, or ready for any of what I had to witness and be a part of and do, but I did, and I'm here. And after that, the Canadian Army sent me to a medic, and the doctors deemed me with, at that time, was acute PTSD. They put me on 11 different drugs. They sent me back out to the FOB to run a machine gun. I almost shot a child and I pulled myself off the tower and said like, hey, I think something's really, really wrong. And they didn't tell my staff I was on all these drugs. And so I was not eating, I was not sleeping, and I wasn't talking. So we know that was a problem. And that's one of the biggest, yeah, we knew.
I love that we also have the same flavor. And I'm like, yeah, my biggest problem is I talk too much.
It's okay. Yeah, and so, yeah, this wise man once told me that I don't need my voice all the time. So I'm working on that. But since we're on a podcast, here we go. After that, I came back to CAF and they deemed me that I had severe post-traumatic stress disorder. That's just what they put on the paper. They gave me, I was getting medically discharged at the time. So they said I was going to go home 3 weeks early before the rest of my regiment and my unit. And they didn't tell anyone and they didn't really tell me what was happening. I was 19 at the time. I was sent home by myself. Somehow made it through 3 major airports with a bayonet on my personal carry, which no one still has given me a reason how that happened or was totally acceptable by any airline. And I got back to Quebec in the middle of the night with no one there and had to call just like a captain I randomly knew. And they picked me up and I hung out at the regiment until my RSM told me that I was going back to the hospital and that I would be, I was no longer going to be with the Valcartier unit. And all before that, my major decided to tell me it would have been a lot less paperwork if I just died. And at the time, I would have agreed that would have been a lot easier to deal with. So in saying that, I spent the next 6 months with no contact with the military. No one from my unit, regiment, or anyone was told where I went, like what happened to me, absolutely nothing. And then finally, they tried to retrain me and send me to Connaught Range in Ottawa, which is one of the largest Commonwealth ranges where we have special operations in the Hill and we have the RCMP. And they decided to have me clear ranges, which was a terrible idea. It didn't go well. And sure enough, I got med boarded out in 2011 at the age of 21 with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I'm sitting at 92% currently. After all of that happened, I went through a very intense period of suicidality, probably till 2015-16, where I was in treatment weekly on 11 different drugs and nothing was working. I had the best doctor in Canada. He was, and he still is, my treatment doctor, Dr. Greg Passy. He served in Bosnia and Rwanda during the genocide as a medic, and he was the first to do PTSD research on post-Rwanda veterans. So he looked at me square in the face, similar the way that you did to me in Montana, and said, I've been with veterans for over 40 years and I've never lost one to suicide. So I'm not about to lose one now. And for some reason, I believed the old man. And from then on, I just went, I did everything I was told, exposure therapy, medication, EMDR, like you name it. I did all the things and nothing was getting better. And it was obnoxious at this point. And then 2015 came around and he suggested art therapy, which I thought was also obnoxious. And I did it because he told me to. And from the art therapy, there was one specific day I remember I was building a piece of jewelry and on the kitchen table. And it was the first day I didn't want to kill myself every waking minute of the day, which was a first. Mm-hmm. And we felt like, okay, we had something here. So I started building jewelry on the kitchen table and it slowly turned into this company. And in 2016, I met with Kevin Hart and he gave me the best piece of advice I had been given at the time. And we took it and then we incorporated. And then a year later, we were on every major celebrity. We were on Ellen. You name the people, they were wearing it. And this business just kind of, and my new purpose, right? So it was less about a business and success as more it was our veterans are coming out with a lack of purpose direction. And when you have no purpose, you don't have a reason to wake up every day. So you lose your identity, you have no purpose and you have no community. And we wonder why we have 44 a day. So once I was able to do that and start to build a purpose, I was okay, but I was not. So what I mean by that was I was waking up and doing the things, but I still wanted to kill myself and I couldn't figure out why with a husband and a child and all this awesomeness, I was still wanting to die. And I was getting really, really, really frustrated. And my treatment doctor said, we think there's something else probably going on here. And what people don't understand is that 11 of the 13 symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury overlap with each other. And so they're really hard to differentiate. And at the time in 2009, Canada didn't know how to handle what was happening with me. And they had self-admitted this. So they just diagnosed me with that. So I had gone a decade with an untreated traumatic brain injury. And the only reason we caught it was because my husband had one that got so severe that his entire body shut down and he collapsed one day. That was arguably one of the worst things that's ever happened in my life to witness and be a part of. But that being said, all in this time frame, I was getting off of these drugs and then I was offered ayahuasca. And so in 2020, I went and sat with ayahuasca for the first time. And it was the first time I was in a community again. It was the first time I was around other people like us. These guys were all Blackwater, ex-Rangers, you name it. And I was the first time I felt seen again. So we're working on a moral injury there. The plant medicine was helping not only the neuroplasticity in my frontal lobe that was already turned off and not working, but then it was also giving me an opportunity to go sit and heal in the divine with the relationship that I had lost so dearly, which was this connection to source, God, you want to name it, whatever you want to call it. And I was able to go back and have those conversations with the guys that I had lost. And it was given that space to heal in that container. So once I did that and I started using plant medicine, I started to realize that there was something so much greater than myself as being a recovering Catholic, as which I call myself. And we really came to a head when Brady collapsed. And once we realized that there was something else really severe here, we had done everything we could in Canada and no one would treat him during COVID and no one would help us. And they kept telling us it was mental health and it was not. He was deteriorating rapidly. His body was falling apart. It was horrific to witness. And then a ranger buddy I saw on Instagram was at this brain clinic. And I was like, what is this? And then I looked at my husband one day and I just had this like right in my feelies. I was like, it's your head. And he looked at me and he's like, you think? I'm like, we've done everything else. It's your head. And sure enough, we called the treatment facility. And after we couldn't get anyone in Canada to treat him, we called on a Wednesday and he was in Texas on a Sunday. And from then on, the head of Defenders of Freedom sat down with my husband at the clinic because they treat veterans there and was like, are you Kelsey Sharon's husband? And he was like, yes, ma'am. And he's like, we think she has a TBI. We've been watching her show and she looks concussed all the time. And sure enough, they said, look, we don't fund Canadians, but we're going to get special permission. We want her to be our first combat female we treat. And so they brought me down to Texas and they ran me through a 2-week program. And sure enough, I had a severe TBI and I had no frontal lobe. And there is a reason why I wasn't getting any better. Invisible injuries.
So like hearing that whole thing in that one thing, instead of picking it up, like I'm covered in goosebumps because we walked the identical path. And yeah, almost when you got MedCept, my board started. And so same time, same story, same, like it would have been easier if you died. I got sent off to some random place on Pendleton with one person above me. Nobody knew where I went. Every ounce of it. And then my art was the food blog.
Right.
And that's why, so everybody knows, when I gave away that food blog, is I had been doing all of the work and none of it stuck in. And I felt the same way that you did. Like, how can I be a New York Times bestseller? How can I have a number one app, have a family in my dreams? And literally the moment something turns off and nobody's around me being like, it would be so much better if I wasn't here. But then here was the worst part of the dissonance. I had so much evidence and gratitude that I wanted to be here. And so it felt like, a prison inside of a washing machine with no exit, because I was like, I don't want to be in here anymore. And I physically couldn't get myself out. And then I took the same path because they found me, hailing our heroes. Hey, here's the deal. We'll do your stem cells because you've done ayahuasca. But if you had not, we would have required you to do both.
Right.
And, you know, that's what led me in my own world from, you know, back to God, back to my purpose, back to those pieces, but then really back in into the work with a purpose that I could actually feel. And so like hearing all that, girl, like you're stuck with me now. You're I get
I'm
it now. Like I get it now. And actually I would love to, so because you mentioned the book. Oh, and by the way, for everybody who wonders what all those acronyms are, don't bother, but I'll give you some. Like FOB is forward operating base, right?
Sorry about that.
No, you're good. I've been doing this my whole career on the podcast. I just don't speak military often, right? So, and then to understand what Kelsey was doing, and we had a lot, we'd go in and clear, and she was sending because they'd have women and children. So untrained, like out with people, like go get them, go hold them. Oh, by the way, they're just as much of a security risk as everybody else. And it's not by their choice. It's because they're being used as weapons, and boom. And so, I'm humbled by you. I'm humbled by you. And I am honored to call you a friend. So thank you for walking the walk and being who you are. Like, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
You too, man.
And it was really easy in Montana when you see your sister to be like, I'm going to say exactly to you what I needed to hear in this same moment, which is like, I selfishly want all of you personally. Because it feels like I pick up so much strength in just how you walk and how you navigate and where you go and the speed at which you go, but the depth that you create. And like, I love how quickly you're like, oh yeah, Kevin Hart gave me the best advice. Like Miss New York Times Square over here on a billboard,
you know, what's
Sirius
really
XM radio. Yeah. Tell me,
you know, you told me, so I only posted that because you told me to,
I know.
And that was a complete surprise. And you know what really saddened me about it? Is I feel like there was two reasons you were telling me to do that. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
I love this. Let's go. I want to hear.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. But it happened just the way you knew it would. people will only support you until your light outshines theirs. And I saw it in that moment, exactly who those people were. And I hated it so much. It's one of the least liked, least, you name it, the second I was in New York Times Square.
Yep.
Ooh, that was fun to witness.
Yeah, well, sometimes we have to do inventory on the environment around us as well.
Yeah, but I didn't expect it to be the people I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, it was really troubling. I'm not going to lie. It's definitely caused me to do a few. Yeah, and I think, again, we get these opportunities.
Can I pause you real quick? Because that felt like a really good moment to share something with you and everybody else. So there's this incredible clip of Mike Tyson. I'll put it in the show notes for my team. It's a minute and 11 seconds. And I think it's a very, very valid point to what you were sharing. And even earlier when you were talking about your neighbor, where there's a very big difference between choosing to have boundaries and containers out of self-awareness, self-integrity, and self-respect, and then accidentally changing our habits, behaviors, or traits because of what happens on the outside of us, right? And Mike Tyson is sharing this so eloquently. He has a rapper on a show and the guy's just, he's just riffing. He's like, I made it, man. And he slips out. He's like, yeah. And like, I got out of the hood, but I cut them out. I cut them out. And Mike Tyson interrupts him and says, you lost. The devil just became your master because they changed your behaviors and they're the same. And every time, a million times, no matter how many times I watch it, it just tickles every single time. And it's just a stark reminder because the other side to that is you don't recognize that you are just the catalyst for their change as long as you remain constant, consistent, and congruent as the example, just like we both fell into the same traps and have numerous times until somebody showed us another way.
Well, right? That's it. And people just need to be shown another way.
And I think we're living in a world that even collapses down the beginning of this, right? What's the number one thing that happens when you're in victim mentality is stagnation, right? It's absolutely impossible to show anybody because you're not even showing yourself or giving yourself the evidence that you've tried something different or done something. And I was on a call the other day and I was like, do you think there's a pause button in life? And they're like, no. I'm like, what you haven't realized about like the slope of life is that when you're making progress, you're going this way because this is monotony. This is not what we're after, right? Like this is a slow death because if you run a mile every day at the same pace for a year, your body doesn't get stronger. It gets weaker because it adjusts to that mile, right? Like we're human beings. And I'm like, if you're not watching this video, my arm is up at a 15 degree slant just so I can hit you with audio. And I was like, the problem is that every moment of doubt, we think we're pausing, but we're actually sliding backwards and we're convinced that we're staying the same, right? That victim mentality, that boom, like, and even for me and you, the biggest thing that was missing is when I would ruminate and get all of that, I was so intense and so used to being an operator that it was like, it felt like I couldn't start anything. But then the moment I would, like everything would unlock. And so it's, you got to remember when you pause, when you're in doubt, when you're in anywhere, you slide backwards, right? This is why I say the devil's in the details, because the details create doubt and doubt creates inaction. But doubt is not an invitation to stop. Doubt is an invitation to learn.
Exactly.
Right? It's a permission slip to try something new. It's a permission slip to swing a way you haven't swung before. It's a permission slip to say, and by the way, I skipped over this when you answered this, but I was like, how did you integrate? If I had to give a quiz or a class on like how to do it perfectly, like you nailed it. Like you preframed your entire environment before you went home from a place of self-awareness and like, hey, here's what I need. Here's where I'm good. And they're all like, hell yeah, heck yeah. And so like, I just had to call that out for a moment too, because I think for a lot of people listening, I think we undervalue the power of space. Right. And space is where things land. And so, you know, we just ran the event and I think I said this to you guys too. And I was like, when I speak, I'm going to put your snow globe in an F5 hurricane and you're not going to know what happened. And I was like, the secret here is that when a snowflake lands, like it hits you in that moment, you're like, oh, I want to go do that. You go do it. When the phone rings, pick it up. Right. We'll bring this back. And I was like, but if there's still things floating around, if there's still things that are unclear, space is the only thing that gives them time to settle. Because if you keep shaking that snow globe, they never land. Right. And so you have to give space for things to land, to find those pieces. And that was something that I learned how to incorporate after our journeys of like the shaman looking at me and being like, you can't drink ayahuasca yet. And I'm like, why? And he's like, you have no purpose for your life. Mm. And I'm like, well, how the fuck am I supposed to find that?
Right.
And he's like, I'll give you an answer. And he's like, write this question down in your notebook. And I was like, cool. What's the question? He's like, what's your purpose in life? And Brad, that's not his shaman name, but that's his name, Brad. And I was like, I Kelsey'd him. I'm like, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, do you recognize that I'm here because I want to kill the world, burn the ships down, but don't want to do any of it because I really want to be alive and it feels like the best option is death and I am so lost. And then he so gently changed his energy and he looked me right in the eye to eye, and he said, George, it's really, really easy. You've just never been quiet enough to hear God's whispers. Mm. And what it made me remember, Kels, was every one of those moments in Somalia for 13 months and Afghanistan. Like, I was in Somalia for 13 months in 2004. Okay, fuckers. So like, phones didn't exist. Okay, there was no calling home. For 13 months, I was gone. And occasionally I'd get an email or send an email like every 4 weeks. So I spent a lot of time just in that space. And it became something that I resisted so much, because it had so many negative connotations associated with it. Because every time I sat there, I'm like staring down a machine gun and I'm like putting Tabasco sauce in my eyes to stay awake. And my buddies and I are fighting, but then we have a friend not back and a boom. And we just have all that space to ruminate on it. But then when it's healed, that space is the secret on the other side, right? To finding that clarity and taking action on them. And so I had to share that because it felt called in that moment.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did. I think a lot of times with space, we fear it because we're actually going to hear what we need to hear. And so we just don't give ourselves time to have it.
Yeah. Well, like, even what's so funny is like, you want to know my best shaman? It's Mike Tyson, because at the beginning of the show, when you talked about the victim mentality, my favorite quote of his, he's just like, the magic you're looking for is in the work you won't do.
Exactly.
And the only thing I added is the magic you're looking for is in the work you won't do and the feelings you won't feel. Because it's not that we won't do the work, it's that we won't feel our way through the work. And it's no different than writing down affirmations on a piece of paper that are logically tickling your brain, but you never feel in your body. Mm-hmm. And so nothing changes, right? And so I love that. And just so everybody knows, and I recommend this, I'm not through Kelsey's book all the way yet, because I listen like 20 books at the same time. But everything, I think everything, even the books linked on your website, right? Browseimmunity.com. Yeah. Can you tell everybody about the actual jewelry? Because I love it and I didn't ask you before, but
no,
yeah,
okay.
If you have.
Yeah, I always have one. So we use old bullet casings. Mm-hmm. They're our production version of them. And then we turn them into pieces and we donate 20% of the net proceeds to the organizations all across the world that are doing that work. And so Defenders of Freedom, Heroic Hearts Project, Boot Campaign, you know, Honor House, all of these ones are super near and dear to me because I only donate to people if you show me your books, and I only donate to people if I've been in your programs, and I only donate to people if I know who's running the organizations. And there's 46 active charities in America for veterans alone, and about 2% of them are the only ones doing anything about it. So, you know, you can't have the suicide rates skyrocket and all these organizations. Somebody's getting paid somewhere and I want to know who it is. So I'm a big believer that the organizations that are doing the hard work deserve the funding. And so I wanted to be the vehicle that put the money in the hands of those. I just didn't want to run another nonprofit. And so our Brass and Unity is really unique in that we have the patent to the bullet casing. So anything with our sunglasses, our jewelry, the ones that have diamonds or crystals or gold or silver or whatever, all of those proceeds get put out to these different organizations. And that was the whole purpose of my starting it, was I didn't know how to help my friends. So I figured if I donated to the people that are doing the hard work, then at least I was helping my friends. And then it slowly turned into this. I became a mouthpiece for these issues. And that's why my TED hasn't been released. So I have no problem saying the hard thing. I have no problem telling you where we're failing our people. And so for me, I've always been a big believer in journaling and writing. And at first, it didn't really work for me. But when I started writing the book, I realized that I was able to go back and explore parts of my life that I didn't necessarily know were an issue. And so even with a decade of therapy, just now when I was writing the book over the 5-year period, I was able to go back and go, oh, maybe my coach raping my teammate was actually a catalyst to a lot of the anger I carried for the majority of my teenage years and angst. Yeah. So when you start to self-examine in whatever modality you want to do it in, it's always going to be beneficial as long as you're willing to lean into the difficult parts of it and see that they can be lessons. And that's where that saying that I repeat like a psychopath is, this life is happening for you, not to you. And so writing the book is able to go back and see that all of these were happening for me, as painful as they were, as unjust as they felt. They were all incredible opportunities for lessons and growth. I just didn't know how to use them yet. That's all it was.
Yeah. And I would love to hear your thoughts too, because I think you nailed it on, like, it's like choosing to be different, right? Or these things are lessons. They're not things happening to me. Have you found too that this landed for you, like as you've journaled more or written more, or even gotten it out more, it's that practice that helps it stick and rewrite it? Because I feel like there's so many people like, oh, I have the distinction. It's going to automatically install itself again. Right. And I feel like the difference between them being like lessons and failures is really working through them so you can see them neutrally. But like, how do you do that? Or is that just a part of everything that's baked in?
Everything. Yeah. Everything I do has that tonality to it. So if I go to do something and somebody cuts me off in traffic, I literally step back and go, that probably happened for a reason. That person who pulled in front of me with the license plate 888 stopped me for a reason. Maybe there's an accident coming up, or maybe I shouldn't have been in that position. Or like, I literally see that in every bit of practice. Like when my son smoked me at Monopoly last night, instead of me getting like, this is bullshit, I looked at him and I was like, dude, you just learned so much about your mortgages, and you just learned so much. And maybe there's a reason why I had to lose in that way and just be demolished by a 7-year-old. It's like, those are all lighthearted excuses. I mean, examples, but if you put it into practical use when things get hard, like for example, if I'm traveling and all of my flights are canceled and I have a once in a lifetime opportunity, I can sit here and I can do two things. I can go into the victim mentality, fuck my life, I can't believe I'm going to miss this opportunity. That's going to start a spur of a chain of events. I'm going to miss all of those shows. Or I go, you know what? It probably happened for a reason. Let me go get on the phone and talk really nicely and calmly and kindly and ask that lady on the phone, hey, how are you doing today? And they're going to help me find a flight and they're going to get me to where I need to be. And sure enough, 99% of the time when I come out of that mentality, every time, it happens. So I've allowed the world to show me enough evidence that if I respond this way versus that way, it's always going to show up, even if at that moment, it's just asking me, okay, did you learn the lesson you say you learned? Okay, you did. Okay, we're going to actually reward you. But we have to throw it at you every once in a while to see if you've learned the lesson or not. And you even said that too. We were talking about coaching and like my practice is fairly new in like the non-psychedelic space. I've been in the psychedelic space long enough, but transitioning into civilians and working to really just unfuck their life has been fun for me, but it's been new. And when you kind of said to me, it's like, Kels, it's in some of that work you're not doing. And what I realized was like, oh, it's because I didn't know how to approach civilians and I didn't know how to approach working with them. And so maybe that's why people didn't realize I work with them. I just didn't know how. And so when you said that, it was like, okay, I need to go figure out how better to market myself to those people, because I've just always been leaning on what I knew, not, you know, what I was, not what I am. And that's the thing about the veteran space. And I'm really, really clear to say this any opportunity I get. Stop resting on your laurels and what you did 10 years ago. That is a part of us. It is not all of us. And we are so much more if we give ourselves the opportunity to show up as that. But if we keep dancing in the past and we keep one foot in the past, we will never get to where we want to be in our future. And so we have to stand 2 feet in the present and understand that you can honor that past, love that past, have it there, but it doesn't have to be all of you. It can be who you were. It's not who you are. They're radically different.
Oh, yeah. I just have gratitude for that version of me getting me here, because I'm like, we didn't know. We didn't know.
You don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. Like, it's the greatest gift ever to then know and be able to make adjustments. And I feel the same way. I mean, and I'll say this to everybody on the show. People ask me all the time, like, vets, like, how do you support vets? I was like, number one, stop placating them.
Sit right there. Stop feeding in.
Stop feeding in. stop feeding in. But number two, support does not look like sending money to organizations that don't support. It doesn't look like some of those things. It means having conversations and supporting people who are doing the mission. And like, I will support Kelsey all day, every day, because that level of filtering, she nailed it, right? Like, go look up the stats for Susan G. Komen, right? Breast cancer, boom. I think it was last time I checked, less than 3% of the money that has actually come in goes to the charity, and the rest is everything else that goes with it, right? And I'll also say this, and I'll say this publicly on my podcast. The reason this matters so much, and this is not even what this show is about, but we're out here now and we're in the bucket that was my life. The governments and no one else is interested in reducing the number. Mm-hmm. That is their collateral damage and byproduct. And it's 44 or whatever number it is right now, less paychecks that have to go out every day. This has only changed from the bottom up, as in anything, any movement, any change, including critical mass. But most people forget that critical mass is only like 9 to 11%. Mm-hmm. It's not the entire country. It's not the entire world, but it's actually taking everything that you've talked about today, including not being a victim and having an issue. But understand that typing on a keyboard doesn't create seeds in the world.
Right.
You can type on a keyboard to get ideas and get feedback, but you got to get off that keyboard to go put some seeds in the world to get it. And for my vets listening, I love you to pieces, but let's not pretend the entire time we were in the military, we didn't joke about the fact that they were never going to take care of us. They never took care of us then. And we have to advocate and fight when we're on active duty. But then when they get rid of us and they don't see us anymore, that they're going to somehow magically come out as unicorns and solve a crisis that seems like a crisis to everybody on the outside in, but is part of the military industrial complex from the inside out, and a big game of risk. And so if you want to know how to support people like Kelsey, support people like Brass and Unity, give more power to the people whose voices are being used to cut through all that bureaucratic bullshit, or use yours. But it really, really starts by like advocating and doing things that get to be different. And like, you'll hear it here. I'll tell you the difference it makes when you actually, like, instead of thanking somebody for their service, like asking them how they are, ask them how their day is, right? Like all those pieces. And it blesses my heart to hear that like you and I both were helped the same way, but those were other people that were like, hey, I've been watching you on video and I think you should really come see us. And my friends being like, I think this will really help, but it's those people. So support those people all day, because they're the ones that really, really make the difference.
Yeah. And they don't ask anything of you. They just want to help you. And I think I always tell people, when you're thanking someone for their service, you don't know what you're thanking them for. So ask them how they are, because if you really wanted the answer about what we've done, you wouldn't sleep at night. So don't thank me for my service, because I didn't know what I was going to do. How about you just say, how you doing? And if I say I'm good, go ask that guy how he's doing. Probably go ask that guy how he's doing. So we can reach out and we can lend a hand, but it comes down to, again, it's not what you say, it's how you make people feel. So if you want people to feel supported and accepted, then make them feel supported and accepted, and support the people that are doing the hard work. Don't support the people that are celebrities and have $1 billion and you think you know them. You don't know what you're supporting. You vote with your dollar. So be smart about it. You vote with every like and every share and every click and every subscribe. All of those things matter, and they matter more than you guys can realize. The thing about our space, which I think is so overlapping, whether it's veterans, coaching, psychedelics, healing, wellness, whatever, is we're told so often that we're broken and we'll never heal. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And if you can, for a second, even look around you and ask yourself, do I or am I even ready to heal? Or do I want to keep riding that label for the rest of my existence and be known as that person? The person who never talked about the hard things, the person who never took the risk to heal themselves, but the person that just stayed in that victim mentality. Because don't get it twisted, even for a single second. It is for sure a victim mentality. We've been told as an injury that we can't heal, but we can, because that's how the brain works. We just didn't understand it a decade ago. So lean into those discomfort and those moments and understand that they're going to get better, but first, they're going to get a lot harder, because the world's going to ask you, how badly do you want this life you say you want?
Oh, for sure. And I want to give some credence to what you said, because you said something about like, I'm not ready to heal. And what most people don't recognize is the moment you take 100% aligned inventory and even acknowledge, like, I get more payoffs in this and I'm not ready to heal. The moment you fully own that to yourself, you'll be shocked at what clarity comes and follows, because that is an actual current state. That is the actual pin in the map that I talk about in this show all the time. It's not that the world knows. It's that you know when you look in the mirror, because that gives you a 100% accurate pin of where you are, which then gives you a solid canvas and solid ground to mitigate that. Because even from that place, you're like, well, why don't I want to? Or maybe this, or what would this look like, right? And it takes time. But I also think, to add even so much on, and I'm going to give you some more kudos, but if you listen to how Kelsey shared the story about how she vets, what she cares about, how much she protects the brand, wants the brand to represent the values, going so far as like, I need to be in your programs and be in your book. I need to know what you do. That is also the reason and the evidence that everybody looks for, of like, why is my business not scaling? Why is it not here? It's because we are what we tolerate. And when you don't tolerate your values, the byproduct creates all the noise that prevents it from getting to where it belongs. And so you also, in telling your story, like, spit a masterclass in like alignment, unapologetically authentic, having something you stand for, being willing to say it, like, and all those pieces. And so normally I ask people like, hey, you know, like, some questions here. I'm going to just go out on a limb here on my own show and say, everybody listening, brassandunity.com, and do yourself a favor and start with the book. I promise you, start with the book. I have spent countless hours with this woman in a very compressed period and got to experience her and also hear her and watch her. And I learned parts of your story today that I didn't know, that soften me so much more and make me love you so much more. But like, you literally are like I aspire to be like you in so many ways. Like, the level of conviction that you have for the things that you believe in is admirable. And it's something that, like, I can only hope to have at one level. Like, the passion, the feeling, like, how fully embodied you are in this. Like, you can tell from a mile away that, like, this is because you care so much about people. And so I promise everybody listening to this, if you just take the time to tune in and get some different perspectives and really take the time to understand this, there's nothing in our life, and I'll remind you of this, even if you're listening to this, you've survived 100% of the days that got you here. All of them. Mm-hmm. And Bobby, for my event, thank you for saying that, because I will be stealing that one and it tickles. And so with that, though, this isn't a game of survival. This is a game of thriving. Yeah. And so if you recognize you've made it here out of survival, that's the most accurate current pin you can put in the map. But now go take a peek at your behaviors, your habits, your traits. Mm-hmm. And what would they look like if they weren't out of survival and reaction anymore, but they were out of creation or building or something different? And I know she'll vouch for this, but it's not all of them. It's just pick one. It's pick one and put in the reps, because the delayed gratification, the evidence required, is 90 days down the road. It's 90 days after consistency. When that seed goes in the ground, you got to water it for quite a hot minute before that thing pops out and starts to give you anything of value. And you got to trust that whole time. Nope, just seeding, watering, boom, boom. Then it sprouts and it's game on. And it's no different than with any of these. And I appreciate you being so open and raw and real. Like, I fucking love you.
I love you too, man. I've been able to get here. You were a big catalyst point to a lot of the change and helping the voices shift and actually believe in myself. I've always said I believed in myself, but you actually showed me how to believe in myself in the way that I spoke. And so that was really incredible, and which allowed me and gave me the space to move through those things, which I needed and was welcomed. But I encourage those that are in our space, that are coaches, that are breathwork practitioners, if you are having a friend who is in this space and they are maybe more hyper than you're used to seeing, it doesn't mean we're not doing the work. It means that maybe there's something else there for us that is a lot harder to regulate than you can see. Mm-hmm. And to trust in that we are always showing up, if we are coaches, to the best of our ability and giving you everything that we have. And that it doesn't really matter what it looks like on the outside. You have no idea what's going on the inside. So hold compassion, have empathy, but also be willing to say the hard thing when you see the person has the space to accept and be willing to receive. So you did that for me, George, and I'll always be forever in your debt for that. I think the last six podcasts I've been on, I think I must have quoted you at least 2 to 3 times in between. And it's been a pleasure and an honor, and I can't wait to do this again. You're going to be coming on the Brass and Unity podcast soon. I'm excited about that. That'll be a much longer episode. We'll be a lot more in depth than the nitty gritty. And then can I plug one thing?
Please. Girl, the floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you so much. So I have the clients I have, but I have a problem. I'm kind of at 100% retention rate, but I have a room for 5 more people and then I'm done for the year. And so I'm putting this out there, and I've never done this on a show. I'm putting this out there that I have space for 5 more people in my life, and I'm taking the risk and I'm jumping full face into the deep end here, because I not only know that I'm really fucking good at this for the first time in my life, I have all of the evidence around me and the people to tell me otherwise. And that comes from George, your amazing soul, showing me that I can be as ruthless as I am and still show up with love and compassion. As long as it's always coming from a place of love, it will be received as such, just the way you did, even though you yelled in my face. And I will never forget that in those moments, for that amazingness around the fire when I went and you looked at me and you said, shut the fuck up. And I was like, I just want to be around the fire. You're like, why do you think we're standing around the fire right now? We're going to burn this bitch to the ground. And I was like, let's go. And then I wept uncontrollably for a very long time.
We cried. Kelsey and I probably clocked hours of cumulative hug time together. Like, hours. There's so many photos of us like, in between facilitation. And I'm just holding Miss Kelsey, and she's also holding me. And the one thing I'll say about the yell is I'm so, like, you get to be so fucking proud of yourself for this whole show, but also, like, I'm, like, gloating over here. And I love you to pieces. And for everybody, I also know the language Kelsey speaks, right? And
yes,
that's one of my jobs. And so
you knew.
Kelsey will also tell you, when I got to that event, I sat very quietly in corners for most of the event. I just watched and watched and watched and watched and listened. And I don't talk about this a lot, but I love people more than anything in the world. And I look at every human in front of me and I see nothing but perfection. And they just forgot, or people put outfits on them over the years that they think are their own. And they don't really realize that naked's the best outfit they own. You were born in it. You're going to die in it. So you might as well live in it now. And that's what I see. And if it takes a scalpel, it takes a scalpel. If it takes a fucking jackhammer, I'll get the outfit off. And if it takes me, like, literally ripping you out of 100 t-shirts as forcefully as possible, I want to know that when I put my head on the pillow, I don't ever have the doubt of, like, if I had said that, would something be different? And so as long as it comes from fierce love and the best intentions, right, you really can't lose. Right. And so surround yourself with people that love you, like, really, really love you. Because just as much as I equally yelled at Kelsey, Kelsey took my feedback and used lack of words and gave me many, many, many return lobs that also tickle. And I'm like, thanks for the reminder. Thanks for the reminder. Thanks for the reminder. Thanks for the reminder. And so, oh man, we're going to be doing this again, probably multiple times.
Say when.
For everybody listening, I would highly recommend you go check out their podcast as well. I will be on it soon. We'll probably be doing it in April, but the easiest place is brassandunity.com. The book is there. The podcast is there. My only question for you is, what's the best way for people to contact you if they want to raise their hand?
KelseySharon.com.
KelseySharon.com. Can you spell that for everybody?
KelseSharon.com.
And then we'll make sure we put links to all of these in the show notes for everybody, so it's really, really easy for all of you guys to find. And so, girl, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for today.
Thanks, dude. This has been awesome. I can't wait to do it again.
Oh, me too. Me too. I'm even more jazzed now, and both of us have hard stops because we have kids on spring break and school projects. And so if you guys want the behind the scenes, that's why the show is ending. And you're probably all going to say thanks for not going for 4 hours, George. And so we will be back. Kelsey will definitely be back for round two. If I have my selfish way, I will find a way to do it in person. And then I'll be on her show soon too as well. And so I just feel in my heart to give a stark reminder that if it tickled on this show, let this be the permission slip to try something different. Just one thing. Just one thought, right? Don't wait anymore. consider it signed by George. And if it doesn't work, DM me and you can yell at me all you want. And then I'll write you another one. And then I'll write you another one. And then we'll find the one that works. And then we'll keep going. But let today be it. No more waiting. No more yesterday. It's now. Yes. And one of my favorite things that Stephen Furtick ever did is he showed the power of a period. Because you can say it's done now, or you can say it's done now. And let's make today the day that it's done. And so if it tickled, take it, put it into practice, and go enjoy the fruits of your labor. Just don't forget to keep watering the seed consistently till it sprouts. And remember, the moment you stop tending to the garden stops growing. And so keep tending to the right place. I love you all. We will either see you in the next episode or you will hear me in your earballs. But either way, we're out.